Hey, what's going on, Outlander fans? Welcome back to Bannocks, Bonnets, and Kilts. I am your host, Jenny Coco Cure, and this is episode 18 of Bannocks, Bonnets, and Kilts, where we are doing the rewatch recap of Outlander season one. We are now up to episode 3 of Outlander season one, which is The Way Out. First of all, let me just say that I hope that everyone had a happy holiday this past holiday season. I know I certainly did. I intended to release at least one episode. This episode, actually, I was intending to release right before the new year. I was intending to release it after Christmas and had a lot of time constraints, of course, with the holidays and technical issues. So unfortunately, that did not happen. So here we are releasing it now. And I hope that I still have you guys out here listening and checking for me. I guess we will see when the numbers come in on this episode. At any rate, guys, let's get down to the recap of episode 3 of Outlander season 1 during this rewatch recap series of Bannocks, Bonnets, and Kilts. All right, guys, this episode of Outlander starts out with Claire and Frank. Back in the 1940s, I think it's the 1940s. Is it the 1940s when they go off to war? I'm not sure if it's the 1940s. I know it's at some point before they got back together and then went to, you know, Edinburgh for their honeymoon, which is what started the whole Outlander thing. But this was kind of a flash back in Claire's memory to back when her and her husband Frank parted ways at the train station when Claire was going off to the front lines to be a combat field nurse and Frank was going off to do his thing as part of the British Secret Service. So Frank was telling Claire how he thought that it was wrong for her to be going to the front lines and he was the man and he should be going. And she basically gave him a little, you know, scolding, talking about, you know, hey, this is the 20th century, honey. It's not like that no more. Women can do what men can do, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, Frank tells her how sexy her independence is. And she's like, I know you love that. And then she gets on the train. They say goodbye to each other. He says, come back to me, Mrs. Frank Randall. And she says, I will, Mr. Frank Randall. And they just part ways. Then we have a flashback to where, well, we have a flashback to the present where Claire is back at Castle Leoc in her room, still being bathed and dressed by Mrs. Fitzgibbons. Not sure what that's about. Mrs. Fitzgibbons has a thing for helping Claire, a grown ass woman, get dressed every day. A little creepy, but whatever. Even Claire says, you know, I can bathe and dress myself. And Mrs. Fitzgibbons, oh, I don't mind. You have such a lovely skin, which is even creepier, you know. So anyway, at one point, while Mrs. Fitz is helping Claire dry off her lovely alabaster skin, and Claire is sitting in front of a mirror, Claire has this kind of melancholy look on her face, and Mrs. Fitz notices it, and she says, what's wrong? And Claire is like, Mrs. Fitz, can I tell you something? And Mrs. Fitz is like, sure. And Claire says, you know, my husband is not dead. And Mrs. Fitz, you know, makes the leap that, you know, oh, he's alive, but you just ran away from him. Oh, was he mean to you? Did he beat your ass a lot or something? And Claire's like, no, that's not it. Actually, what had happened was I am from the future. Mrs. Fitz says, excuse me? And Claire is like, well, I was in Edinburgh, right? On like my honeymoon with my husband. And then like I went to these standing stones. You know about the standing stones. And Mrs. Fitz said, yeah, I heard a little something about it. What? And Claire was like, yeah, I went to the standing stones and I was transported back in time 200 years when I was on my honeymoon in 1940, blah, blah. And now I'm back here in 1830, blah, blah, 1840, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know, this is crazy. Do you think if I told Dougal and Colum about this, that they would believe me and let me go back to the stone so I can go home? And Mrs. Fitz was like, I don't know. I mean, you can try it and see, but I don't know why you're telling me all this. You don't expect me to do anything, do you? Because I'm a Christian woman. And she started bagging up, and Claire's like, wait, hold up now, don't trip now. I'm just saying, you know, I just want to go home. And she says, well, and Mrs. Fitz was like, get away from me, honey. I'm born again, saved, sanctified. I don't do none of that voodoo hoodoo mess. Nuh-uh, don't touch me. I'm out. And Claire was like, no, don't go. And Mrs. Fitz was like, backhand slap, pa-cow, right across Claire's face. And then Claire woke up from her daydream. She hadn't actually told Mrs. Fitz that she was from the future. She was just dreaming about it and then came up with that really probably realistic scenario of how that shit would have went down. So it's good that she didn't actually do that. So anyway, Mrs. Fitz actually is still standing there helping her dry off her alabaster skin. And she does notice in the mirror. Well, no. Mrs. Fitz is rambling on about something about a gathering. And Claire says, I'm sorry, what? I don't know what that means. And Mrs. Fitz is like, the gathering, you know, it's when all the clans come together and pay homage to Carlem and all that mess, all that stuff. You know, if you were to help out with the gathering and, you know, show that you're useful and everything, you know, you might get in Carlem's good graces. And that's a good thing to do around these parts, especially for somebody who might want to leave. Hint, hint, wink, wink. So Claire takes a hint and realizes that, you know, in order for her to get in Colum's good graces and so that he would trust her, you know, she's got to, you know, show that she is someone who is, you know, not a spy, which is what they're thinking she might be. She has to show that she's there and is helpful and useful. So Claire goes back to her surgery. You know, her surgery slash prison. And she starts to read up on the, you know, the former, you know, healer's notes and, you know, starts saying, you know, well, you know, maybe if I just start incorporating my 20th century knowledge of medicine and this 18th century stuff, you know, together, I could do some, you know, healing around here and make an impression upon these people. So she started, you know, doing healing. She started having people come to her surgery, and she was, you know, treating all kinds of problems, you know, health issues and wounds and stuff like that. And she was, you know, doing really well, and people were really impressed with her skill and stuff like that. And, you know, she still had her, you know, she's Angus and Rupert were still, you know, watching over her, making sure that she wasn't getting into any issues or anything, mostly Angus. But after a while, you know, they started thinking, okay, well, she's not doing anything. She's just seeing patients and stuff, and she's not getting into any trouble. So eventually they started to, you know, not really hang out and watch over her as much. You know, in fact, they would, you know, kind of shirk their duties, you know, the guards, you know, Rupert and Angus, and they would hang out in the kitchen drinking and stuff instead of really watching over Claire. And when Claire noticed this, she was happy. You know, she was like, oh, they trust me. They don't feel like they need to keep an eye on me every second. So that's good. In fact, she went to the kitchen one day and found them, you know, drinking, Rupert and Angus. And she was like, hey, can y'all help me with some crates that's on the stairs with some supplies in it? I could help y'all. If y'all could help me with that, I'd really appreciate it. And they were like, yeah, we'll get to that in just a minute. So they were in no hurry to come down to help her. They were actually fine with letting her handle her stuff herself. So that was a good sign of them having now become trusting of her and not fearing that she's going to run off or do something crazy. Anyway, while Claire was in the kitchen, one of the kitchen maids dropped something and, you know, and Mrs. Fitz was there and she said, oh, honey, don't worry. You just go back to your room and tend your other kids and stuff. Go back to your house and tend to your other children. So she released her and Claire looked and was like, well, what's wrong with her? You know, is everything all right? And Mrs. Fitz was like, no, her son died last night. So, of course, she's upset about that. And Claire was like, died? Was he sick? Why didn't anybody tell me? I could have maybe helped. And Mrs. Fitz was like, no, he wasn't sick. He was possessed, honey, by some demons, by some evil spirits. Because he went to the Black Kirk, which is a little area that, you know, they believe was haunted or possessed by demon spirits. And he went up there and got possessed. And then he just succumbed to the evil, you know, and Claire is, of course, looking like, Okay. And, Rupert and Angus, they're sitting there too. They're co-signing everything. When Claire's like, y'all believe in that? And it's like, of course we do. What you talking about? You don't? She's like, oh, I better not waste too much of a stink about not believing in something like this because these people are simpletons. They have never left this area. They don't know anything about the world. And of course, they believe in stuff like evil demons and spirits. So, it's in the 18th century, especially, you don't want to, shirk on anybody's, belief system. You just don't want to do that. But of course, Claire, being a woman from the 20th century and of course educated, knows that that's not what it really was and that the child was probably sick from something and it's unfortunate that he passed or whatever. Anyway, while she's there, this young boy comes in and he says, Mistress Beecham, Colum wants to see you. He wants you to come and see him. And Mrs. Fitz goes to him and goes, boy, don't you know how to comb your hair? What's wrong with you? And she's putting her hands in his hair. He's like, stop, auntie, stop messing with me. And she says, this is my nephew. He was the young man's best friend, the one that passed last night. And Claire was like, oh, okay. Well, I guess I'll go see what Colum want. Anyway, in the next scene, she went to see Colum, and Colum was there in his chambers, being fitted with another coat by I guess a tailor. And the coat that he was fit with was all the way down to the floor. It was very long, which is unusual. Colum looks down at the coat and looks at the tailor and is like, it's a bit long, isn't it? And the tailor was like, yes, well, it's a one of a kind coat for a one of a kind man. And Colum is like, so you made this coat because you think I need to hide my legs? And the man was like, and Colum was like, look, I was told you was the best tailor in Edinburgh. And I was told that you knew what you was doing. But apparently you think that it's funny. Or you think that it's a good idea for me to be ashamed of my legs and hide my legs? And the man was like, no, that's not it at all. Colum took his knife out. The man was like, oh my Lord, please don't kill me. So Colum said, look, take this shit right here and start over. Make me a standard frock coat. Don't get cute with it, okay? I ain't ashamed of my legs. And I don't respect anybody else. If you don't like looking at my legs, then I can gouge your eyes out with this knife if you don't like looking at my neck. That's not what he said, but you know what I'm saying. Colum was not trying to hear anything about anyone thinking that he should be ashamed of his legs. So he let the tailor go to, make him another frock coat. He said, have it back by tomorrow if you know what's good for you. So Claire, she's in the room. She has witnessed this whole unpleasant scene. And Colin was like, do you know how to sew, by the way? And she's like, nah, just skin. And that probably wouldn't make a good coat for you. He's like, yeah, okay. He's like, look, he starts unbuttoning his pants. And Claire sees this little cot in the room. And Colin is standing by the cot. And Claire's got this look on her face like, uh-oh, what the hell? Colin was like, my old healer used to massage me. It made movement easier. I was hoping you can do the same. And Claire was like, phew, okay, a massage, I can do that. So anyway, he took off his pants and laid on the cot with just his shirt on. And Claire saw his legs, and I guess, she realized that he wanted her to massage his legs. But then she was like, well, actually, for your kind of issue, I think massaging the base of your spine would be better. And I think it would be more beneficial to you. So the man was like, so Colin was like, okay. He raised his shirt up, showed her his not so sexy ass. And she kind of had this look on her face like, okay. And he was like, what, does my ass offend you too? And she's like, no, I'm good. So she gets some oil, and rub it on her hands. And she starts massaging and everything. He starts groaning and groaning. Oh, that feels good, actually. So they have a little chit chat, about, different little things. And, after a while, he begins to groan a lot louder. And she's like, am I hurting you? He's like, no, no, that's actually relieving the pain a lot. You seem to know what you're doing. How about you join me at my party tonight? You know, I'm having a little get together. You know, it's going to be some music and fun and food, and it's going to be great. And since you, you know, helping me out right now, you know, you can come to the party. And Claire was like, cool. So Claire scored some more good points with Colin. Anyway, later at the party, Claire sees that Colin is laughing and talking and enjoying his family and everything. And he seems to be in good spirits. And Dougal comes up to her and says, Colin looks good tonight. And she's like, yes. And Dougal's like, I heard that you're responsible for it. And Claire's like, well, I did what I could. And Dougal was like, it looks like the feral cat we saw on the road is trying to retract her claws. And Claire was like, what a delightful, charming description you have of me. Excuse me, I'm finna go over here, you know, away from your ass. So she moved away from Dougal and went to the front of the room where she could see the gentleman who was setting up to perform like a musical performance for the audience. There was a lot of people there to see this performer perform a musical, you know, like a concert. Anyway, she sits there. She's got a glass of Cullum Strong liquor, you know, because Claire never turns down a glass of liquor. And she sits next to Leary. Leary is there, the girl who Jamie had saved from the beating. And Claire looks at her and says, oh, I don't think we've been formally introduced. I'm Claire Beecham. And Leary says, Leary McKenzie. And then she looks back in the back of the room and she sees that Jamie is there. And Claire looks back there and sees that Leary is looking at Jamie. And she looks at Leary and she goes, oh, Mr. McTavish. She still thinks his name is Mr. McTavish. She says, Mr. McTavish is a fine figure, isn't he? And Leary's like, yeah, he is fine, but, you know, he don't know nothing about me. He's not paying me any mind. And Claire's like, really? Well, you know, sometimes men don't know what's best for them. Sometimes you got to give them a little push, you know. So anyway, Jamie makes his way up there with them. And he sits down between them. And Claire, trying to play matchmaker, says to Jamie, I was just telling Leary how beautiful she looks tonight. And Jamie looked at her and like, oh, yeah, she looked good. So anyway, what's going on with you? Jamie is not paying any attention to Leary. He really only has eyes for Claire. It's quite clear. Anyway, the gentleman with performing a concert, he starts to sing. And, you know, he gets his little sing on. It's real nice. He has a beautiful voice, you know. And Jamie is whispering to Claire a lot about stuff. And Claire is trying at first to kind of get his attention to Leary. But Jamie's not really interested in Leary. He's interested in Claire. And at one point, Leary even tries to jump in and say, I remember when you used to come here a long time ago and you were so, you know, good looking and everything. And well, she didn't say it like that. You know, it's not so blunt. She just, you know, was like, you know, trying to make it pretty clear that she noticed him when he used to come. And he was like, well, you couldn't have been more than about 7 or so when I was here before, right? And Leary was like, I guess. And he looked at Claire. He's like, you know, I was 16. You know, a young man that age is not going to notice a bunch of snot-nosed kids. And Claire was like elbowing him like, dude, the girl, you know, come on, man. He looked at her like, what? You know, the whole matchmaking thing that Claire was trying to do with Jamie was not working because, you know, Jamie just didn't have eyes for her. So at one point, you know, they're listening to the performance. Jamie notices that Claire is, you know, feeling herself a little bit, drinking all that strong liquor from Colin. He takes a glass from her and he's like, look, you know, my bandage, you know, from my wound is starting to irritate me a little bit. Can you go check it out for me? You know, she's like, now in the middle of the concert? He's like, yeah, yeah. You know, it's really bothering me. And she's like, okay, I guess. So he finishes the drink. He gives Leary the glass. He says, take that back to the kitchen, baby, will you? So he and Claire get up and leave. So when they end up back in the surgery, Claire's like, let me look at your shoulder. And Jamie's like, oh, I'm good. I just wanted to get you back down here while you could still stand upright. And she's like, oh, okay. So you just thinking I was drunk. And he's like, yeah, a little bit. She's like, maybe I was. But, you know, if you wanted me to, I could have took those bandages off back at the stable. And he was like, nah, I didn't want to do that before Alec. Alec was the other stable hand. And she's like, oh, you mean your scars? You didn't want him to know you were flogged. He says, no, it wasn't that. He knows I was flogged. He's just never seen it. And it's different when you know something, but then you see it. It's just different. And she's like, well, you let me see it. He's like, well, you have a way of making me feel like you're sorry for it without making me feel pitiful. And she's looking at him and he's looking at her and they're gazing at each other and shit. So he's like, well, I need to go. So he gets up to leave and she's like, well, let me look at it just to be sure. You know, so she undoes his neckerchief and everything. And, you know, he's giving her that little smoldering eye look, you know, and she's glancing up at him all shy and demure. She opens his shirt up and looks at his shoulder. She's like, oh, it looks good, you know. I could probably take this off in a few days. And he's like, mm-hmm. So she's like, good night, Mr. McTavish. He says, good night, Mistress Beecham. He leaves. So the next day, Claire meets Galus in the garden, I guess, and they're picking stuff. And Galus mentions that Mrs. Fitz's nephew is now seized with evil, possessed too, because he had gone off with the other boy to the Black Kirk. He didn't tell nobody he was there, you know, but now they realize he was, because now he has the same evil demon possession that the other boy had. So Claire's like, look, come on, maybe the boy's just sick. Has anybody ever thought that he was just sick? And Galus was like, you don't believe in evil demons? And you don't believe in magic? And Claire was like, I never really thought about it. And Galus was like, well, you know, this place is where people believe in stuff like that. You need to, you know, get with the program. And Claire was like, well, you know, what if the boy is just sick? You know, we could help him because we know about this sort of thing. We could help. Galus was like, I ain't going near him, and neither should you. So Claire just walks off. She leaves. And Angus, by the way, is watching over her. You know, tired of following her around. But he overhears this conversation and he knows where she's going. So when she's leaving and she's going to see this boy, Thomas Baxter, I think is his name, Angus says to her, look, you don't want to get involved in this. If Colin finds out, he will not be happy. Of course, Claire ignores him, and she goes to the house where this boy is. Mrs. Fitz is there and the mother, and well, I don't think the mother is there at the moment. Mrs. Fitz is there and they're all watching over this young boy. He's tied to the bed. He's groaning and having like visions and stuff. And Claire's like, why is he tied up? And Mrs. Fitz is like, because he's possessed and he gets weird and violent with the possession. So we had to tie him to the bed. They all look upset and stuff. And Claire's looking at his eyes and, you know, examining him a little bit. And she's like, something's not right. She knows that it's not, you know, a demon possession, of course. So when the mother and the priest show up, you know, the mother's all upset. You know, she's like, you know, to Mrs. Fish, she says, why are you letting a stranger in here at a time like this? And she's upset. And Claire tries to say to her, look, I may know what's wrong with him and I might be able to help. Just give me a chance. And, you know, Mrs. Fitz is looking at her, but the mother's crying. You know, the father, he done already started his prayers and splashing holy water on the boy and everything. And Mrs. Fitz says, finally, you better go, you know, let the father do his work. So then Claire leaves. So Claire, you know, goes back to the castle with Angus, you know, and at one point Angus tells her to sit, you know, and wait for him while he go check on something. And as she's sitting there, she hears a girl giggling off to the side, and she looks over, and down this hall in another part of the castle, she could see Leary, you know, giggling, and Jamie is kind of following behind her. And then she sees them start to kiss, and they're all into it and everything, and Jamie kind of, you know, looks over and sees that Claire is watching, but Claire turned her head real quick. And Jamie gets back to kissing, and then him and Leary go off somewhere else. And Claire is like, okay. yeah, that was an interesting moment. So later at dinner, everybody is all at the dinner table, and Claire is sitting across from Jamie, and she decides to get all playful with him and say, "So, Jamie, your lips look a little swollen. Did you get hit by a horse?" And he gives her this look like, "Okay, all right now," because he knows that she knows that she shouldn't be, revealing what she saw, because he shouldn't have been, messing with Leary like that. But at any rate, he says, "Yeah, horse swung his head and got me." And Claire's like, "Those fillies can be dangerous." And Jamie very calmly puts his foot over hers in like a warning, like he's gonna, step on her foot or whatever to keep her from, saying too much. But Claire is not having it. She's giving him this little smirky look. And Murtaugh is sitting right next to Jamie. He says, "Alec has you working with the fillies now?" And Jamie's like, "Yeah." So then Claire kicks Jamie's foot off of hers, and Jamie spills his drink and spills it all over everything, including Murtaugh. And Murtaugh's like, "What's wrong with you?" And Jamie says, "Bit my tongue." And Murtaugh calls him a clumsy dolt. Jamie decides to get up because he don't want, Claire to fuck with him no more. So he's like, "I'm gonna see if Alec needs anything else." So he leaves, and Murtaugh is giving her a look because he knows she's fucking with him. So he sits in front of her and he goes, "If you're teasing the lad about Leary, if Colum or Dougal finds out that Jamie's messing with her, he'll get more than just a bloody nose." And Claire said, "What, like a wife?" And Murtaugh said, "Maybe." And that's not the wife he should have. Leary will be a girl until she's 50. Jamie needs a woman, and you know the difference between a lassie and a woman, Mistress Beecham." So he gets up, and Claire looks a little guilty. So, later she's like outside, and she's feeling all melancholy, and she admits to herself that she was a little jealous of Leary and Jamie's intimacy because she misses her husband, and she starts to cry a little bit. And then Dougal, shows up, and he's asked her if anything wrong. She's like, "No, I'm good." She wipes her eyes real fast. He's like, "We need to, get some stuff for the gathering, and I wonder if you want to go to the city or to the village with me tomorrow, to see Mistress Duncan, Gaylis Duncan, so that you can restock your supplies." And Claire was like, "Yeah, that'd be great. I'd like to go to see Gaylis." So he's like, "Okay, we'll leave in the morning." So the next day, Claire and Dougal go into the village, and Claire visits with Gaylis. And while she's there, Gaylis and Claire, at first they're chit-chatting about, Thomas Baxter and everything, and about whether or not he's really sick or possessed. And Gaylis is, in the meantime, is trying to sneak and find out a little more information about Claire, because she doesn't know much about Claire, and she has her suspicions, you can tell, about who Claire really is. And she's, always trying to sneak in a little question here and there, like she wants to know more. So Claire is cleverly and very steadfastly avoiding these questions. And at one point, when Gaylis asks Claire something about being a Sassenach in the Highlands, and how difficult it must be for her, they hear like some voices coming from outside, like a mob. And Claire goes to the window, like, "What's going on out there?" And she sees like all these people, and she sees the father with his little boy, Gaylis speculates that it's probably one of the young boys who's always stealing stuff, probably getting ready to have a punishment. And her husband, Gaylis's husband, who happens to be procurator fiscal for Cranesmere, so he was like judge, jury, and executioner, pretty much. And being that, he got to pretty much bring down the hand of justice on anyone who broke the law. And since the young boy stole, according to Arthur, when he came into the room to get some something for his bubbling gut from his wife, who, you know, she had all her herbs and stuff, so she could give him something for his stomach. And Claire confronted him, and she was like, "You're not going to, you know, harm the boy just because he stole some bread." You know, he told her that the boy had stole some bread from his employer. So, you know, Claire's like, and he told her that Father Bain was arguing for the boy's hand to be taken. And Claire was like, "You're not going to mutilate him just because he stole some bread." And he's like, "The boy confessed. Okay, so whatever, you know, your opinion means nothing." So Galus, seeing that Claire was upset by this, decided to look at it, because Galus didn't care one way or another. But she saw that Claire was upset, so she got in front of Arthur and started putting on the charm, talking about, "This young boy was probably just hungry, and surely you're not going to hurt him. You're such a generous, thoughtful man. And what if our union had been so blessed and our child was in a predicament like this? You know, you have to think of it that way." And she's touching out all of his stuff, and he's, you know, feeling her and everything. And he's like, "Oh, well, since he's confessed, you know, I can't let him go, but maybe I can just nail his ear." And Gail was like, "You're such a kind-hearted soul, you know." So anyway, when he leaves, Gayla's like, "See, simple as that." And Claire was like, "What does nailing his ear mean?" And Gayla's like, "Nail his ear to the pillory." So when they look outside, you know, they see that they've gotten the boy up on the scaffolding where, you know, you execute people or, you know, punish people. And they sit him down and they take his ear and put a nail to it and literally nail his ear to this place where they usually put people's heads through, like, you know, like when they have their head locked in. You know, you've seen those things in the old movies where they have their head and their hands locked, you know, where they're standing there bent over with their head through the hole and their hands through the holes as well. It's called a pillory, I guess. So they nail the boy's ear to this pillory. And Claire is horrified looking at this. And, you know, Gillis is like, "Well, that's done. Not so bad. Now let's get to cutting some of these herbs up." So anyway, later, Jamie comes to pick up Claire. And this is right at a point where Gillis had almost gotten Claire to start talking about, or was trying at least to get Claire to start talking about where she's from again. So Jamie shows up and he's like, "I'm here to pick up Mistress Beecham." And Gales was like, "Oh, sit down and have a glass of wine. Claire was just about to tell us about herself and where she's from." And Claire gives him a look and he goes, "Oh, well, no, we need to get back to the castle because, you know, we don't, then, you know, everybody eat all the food and, you know, we need to eat." So he gets Claire and they go outside and Claire thanks him for, you know, hurrying, getting her out of there. And he's like, "You're welcome." And she's like, "You know, that boy nailed to the pillory, that's kind of messed up." And Jamie's like, "Yeah, well, you know, he'll be all right. He can go if he wants to." And Claire's like, "He can? Well, how can he?" And he just has to get up the courage to rip his ear off the nail. And Claire's like, "He's got to rip his ear off the nail?" He's like, "Yeah, it's, you know, no big deal. You know, it'll hurt a little bit, but it'll, you know, quick jerk of the head, it's over." And Claire's like, "That's horrible." And she says, she looks at him and she says, "You know what? Your fingers look like they're really strong." And he looks at her. He's like, "Oh, God, okay. So what do you want me to do?" So they concoct this little scheme. So Jamie goes up to the pillory on the scaffold where the boy is, and he goes up to him and says, "Come on." And meanwhile, there's a crowd gathering around. He says, "Come on, you can just jerk your head and get it over with real quick. It's not that hard. Come on, let me help you out." He grabs the boy's head. The boy's like, "No, no," you know. And Jamie's like, it's not that difficult. It's just a little bit of pain, a little blood, no big deal. So when Claire's standing there, she pretends to become faint and she puts her hand on her forehead. Oh, and she passes out and she falls all over these, you know, crates and all of these people. And they're like looking around like, oh, my God. So when everybody is distracted at Claire falling out, Jamie jerks the nail out of the boy's ear and tells him to go home. So he runs off. And then when Jamie climbs down, by the way, Gillis is in the window at the cast in her house looking down. And she's kind of smirking at him like, mm-hmm. So Jamie goes and gets Claire and picks her up. He's like, sorry, guys, she's not used to seeing blood. So he picks her up and, you know, carries her on. And Claire thanks him for helping her out with that. And then she's like, would you like to help me with something else? So he's got this look on his face like, what now? But the thing about it is that he's willing to do whatever she asks him to do. He doesn't refuse her. So they end up at the Black Kirk, this place where the two boys had been so-called possessed. And, you know, they're kind of hanging out there. Claire's looking around trying to see if she can find anything unusual. And Claire and Jamie is telling her stories about how, you know, it's not uncommon for young boys to come up here, you know, trying to show their bravery. And, you know, they, you know, play on the walls and hang out, you know, just testing, you know, what do you call it? Testing fate, because the place is supposed to be possessed. And then he says another thing that they would do is eat a little bit of wood garlic if they could find some. And she says, wood garlic? He's like, yeah. And he looks around and I think they find some. And she's like, this stuff here? He's like, yeah, it's nasty. You know, I don't like the taste of it. But, you know, some people find it a treat. And she's looking at it and she's like, this isn't wood garlic. This is Lily of the Valley. And he's like, Lily of the Valley? She's like, yeah, it's like it's poisonous. And she says, by the way, well, the priest that lived, because he had told her that some priests had lived in this area. And she says, well, the priest from Germany. And he's like, Germany? She says, I mean, Prussia, however it's pronounced, but that's what Germany was known as at the time. It was not known as Germany in the 18th century. So Jamie confirmed with her that is where the priests were from. And she was like, I know what's wrong. I know what's wrong. So she took a piece of the Lily of the Valley and they went back to the village, and Claire went back to Mrs. Fitz's sister's house where Thomas Baxter was still tied up. And at this point, the priest was given the last rites because Thomas had finally, you know, really kind of passed out. He had gone into like shock or whatever, and he wasn't responding. So they thought he was on his way out. And Claire showed the little piece of wood garlic. I mean, not wood garlic, but Lily of the Valley to Mrs. Fitz and said, this is what he ate and this poisoned him. I know what to give him to save his life. Let me do it. And Mrs. Fitz was like, I don't know. She's like, please just give me a chance. She says, we can save his life. I promise you. So Mrs. Fitz is like, okay. And the priest is like, get out of here, girl. You don't know what you're doing. You know, I'm here to save this boy's immortal soul. He is possessed by a demon. And she's like, you know, get out of the way. I'm going to, you know, save him. He's actually poisoned. So then Mrs. Fitz says, Father, let her by so she can tend to the boy. And he's like, I'm not going to be told what to do by a woman. And Mrs. Fitz got up and said, excuse me, this is my father's house. And I will say what goes on underneath the roof. So he bags up, you know, and Claire gets over to the boy. But before she can get past him, the father grabs her arm. I smell the stench of the devil on you. She's like, whatever. She jerks her arm away. Then she bends down to Thomas and gives him a little sip of this vial of medicine that she has. And she's speculating that, you know, if she's in time, that this will help him. If she's not in time, then it can kill him. So she's just waiting to see, you know, what happens. And the boy eventually starts to kind of come around. And, you know, then he looks over and sees his mother, who's also there. She's been crying the whole time. He looks over and sees his mother. He says, "Ma." And she gets up. "Oh, my boy. Oh, my boy. It's a miracle. It's a miracle." You know, so he's back. He's Claire has healed him. And Mrs. Fitz looks at Claire and says, "Oh, thank you so much, Mistress Beecham. Thank you. You are a miracle worker." And the father is not happy. He gets his coat. And then he gets ready to leave. But before he leaves, he turns around with this scowl on his face. And he says, "No one gets away with mocking God. You will pay for this." So he leaves. Later, Claire is with Jamie. And Claire says, "You know, I think the father really would have preferred that that boy died so that he could be proven right rather than me helping him." And Jamie explains that, you know, a man's beliefs are how they make sense of life. You take that away and, you know, what do they have left? You know, he's like, "Don't they believe that where you come from?" Claire's like, "I guess." So then Jamie tells Claire that everybody is saying, including Mrs. Fitz, how Claire is a miracle worker now. And everybody is so happy that, you know, she has done this incredible thing. But now that she has done this incredible, amazing thing, Colum is bragging also about having this healer who is just the best of the best of healers. And Claire's like, "That's good." And Jamie pretty much indicates that, you know, Colum isn't going to want to let go of his fantastic healer anytime soon. And Claire's like, "What?" He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "With you doing such great work, why would he want to let you go?" And Claire's like, holy crap, I'm never going to get out of here." And Jamie gives her a look like, "I don't really want you to go anywhere." But of course, he can't say that out loud. So, you know, Claire is all upset and depressed. She doesn't want to even leave her room, but eventually she does. And she goes to another one of the concerts that they're having at the castle. The same man from before is there to perform. And she says, you know, the only reason that she came out of her room was to have some more of the strong liquor so she could not have to think about her messed up situation. Everybody's staring at her, looking at her like she's some mysterious witch or some strange person who can perform miracles. And she doesn't like that. So she goes to the back of the room with her glass of Rhenish. And as she's drinking her Rhenish, Jamie comes up to her. "Didn't you see me waving? I almost re-injured my arm." So he takes her by the hand and pulls her to the front with him to sit down to listen to the concert. And then when the man starts to sing, he explains to her what the lyrics mean. And he's explaining that it means that a woman is sad on a fairy hill, and that she touches one of the standing stones and goes back in time. And when she's back in time, she meets people, friends and lovers. And then, you know, one day she goes back to the fairy hill and she goes back to her own time. And when she's listening to Jamie and listening to the music, she's like, "Oh my God, this is like my story." So then Claire gets excited. She's like, "Oh, so then there's a way to go back to the stones and go back in time." She feels like that this is her signal, her sign that there is hope, that she can go back to the stones at some point. She's just got to figure out how to get there. She's got to work hard and she's got to, you know, make a plan so that she can get away from this castle and get back to those stones. Because now she knows that there is a way, or she feels in her heart that there's a way that she can get back to her time, as long as she can get back to those stones, and then she can get back to her husband. And the episode ends with her smiling and clapping at the music because she's hopeful now about maybe a possible light at the end of the tunnel for her situation. So that's the end of episode 3 of Outlander season 1, The Way Out. My thoughts on the episode, of course, are that this is great. It's stuck pretty much to the book. I'm not going to do any book comparisons because this is the rewatch recap where I said I was not going to be doing that. But this was just great. It was great to see, how the story is just first developing, and to see the traces of Sam and, well, not Sam, of Jamie and Claire as they get to know each other. The visit at the Black Kirk is probably my favorite scene in this episode, because in that you can see the banter and the flirting between the two. And there's a couple of scenes where you can see Jamie very, very secretly, very undercover, checking Claire out, whenever her head is turned, when she's not paying attention. Like in that one part where, he's describing to her that he's an educated man and that he had a tutor. And at one point she looks over, away from him, and he gives her a body check. He looks up and down her body. I like that. and it's just, I like the way that it's a slow burn. It is not something that they jump into. It's just like in the book, it's a slow burn. It is not something that is leapt into the attraction and the relationship between Jamie and Claire. It is a slow buildup and a slow burn, where in the very early episodes and the very early chapters of the book and the early episodes of the show, they just don't really acknowledge that it's there, even to themselves maybe, but everyone else around them, or at least the audience that's reading the book or that's watching the show, can see it, and it is very clear to everyone, everyone watching or reading. And I just can't wait to get to the episodes where they finally get together, but I enjoy the slow burn ride as it progresses. So anyway, guys, that is it for Bannocks, Bonnets, and Kilts episode 18. And thank you guys for joining me. I hope that my audience is still here checking me out and listening. We'll see how it goes. I still plan to do these episodes as long as I have at least some audience out there checking me out. And I know taking off these last couple of weeks might have kind of hindered that a little bit, but we'll see what goes on when you guys see another episode has been uploaded. Maybe you'll come back. We'll see. And if I see that you guys are still checking me out, I'll continue on with the next week episode, which is episode 4, season 1, The Gathering. Episode 4, season 1. The Gathering. So check me out next Sunday. As long as you guys show me that you are interested in watching or listening to this, I will be back next Sunday, January 14th, to recap episode 1, season 4, The Gathering. So check me out then. In the meantime, guys, have a good week. Happy New Year to everyone and all. And I hope that you guys are having a good year so far. And I will see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.